Hi, this is Simona Di Silvestro, and you're listening to More Front Wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph Walcraft, joined as always by my co-editor Paul Dalby, and this week we're joined by one of More Front Wing's contributors, longtime contributors, Zachary Houghton. Zach, it's great to have you back. I don't think we've seen you since last year, have we? It's been a little while. So, of course, you've been keeping up with your own site and contributing to our race summaries this year, and as well as a few other things. So, great to have you as always.
Oh yeah, always great to be on, guys. Thanks for having me again.
And you're on the phone because you're having laptop issues.
So. Oh my goodness, yeah, it's it's electronic mayhem here. So it's. I appreciate you bearing with me if I'm all fuzzy on the phone or however. So
I apologize to people at home for making you listen to someone on a phone line for every stage of the podcast tonight, but we hope that you don't mind so much and that you'll play along. Speaking of playing along, I was originally going to launch into here with a joke about how you guys are making me miss the first playoff game that the Toronto Maple Leafs have played since 2004, but as it turns out, you're actually doing me a favor because they're losing terribly. So I'm just going to sit in here and talk about Andy Carr and pretend that that thing out there in the other room is not happening. And so this, of course, is going to have taken place yesterday, so that all sounds a little bit confusing, but there you go. The Leafs are not good. That's really the gist of what you need to hear there. So we pretty well summarized Long Beach last week, so this week we're looking ahead. We're looking ahead not only to the coming weekend's race in Brazil, for which most of the teams and drivers have packed up for and are on their way there at this point, but also looking even further afield to the month of May. And, of course, I have two salivating co-hosts here who cannot wait to start talking about everything that's going to be happening at Indianapolis Motor Speedway this month. One of the big things, of course, that came out in the news this week was the announcement by Pippa Mann that she'll be driving a third entry for Dale Coyne in this year's Indianapolis 500, a long-anticipated but hotly anticipated bit of news that came out this week. And, Paul, you had an opportunity to speak to Pippa this week, didn't you?
I did, yes. We had a great interview, a good chance to catch up and visit about what she's been doing, in her road back over the last 18 months, coming back from the accident at Las Vegas, what it's taken her to get back into the ride, how close she really came last year to being in a car at Indianapolis, and then what she's looking forward to during the month of May coming up this year at Indianapolis.
Sounds great. So we look forward to hearing that, and we'll let you give a listen to that interview right now.
And here on the More Front Wing podcast, we're extremely excited again to be joined by a longtime friend of More Front Wing and now officially an entrant into the 97th Indianapolis 500, Pippa Mann. Welcome back and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And it feels so good to have that announcement out there so that people know I am going to be driving again this year's Indianapolis 500.
Well, Pippa, tell us a little bit, I guess, how this all came together. You mentioned in your announcement that you and Dale have been talking for a number of years. Give us a little background about how the whole deal came together for you.
Well, Dale and I have had this sort of on and off continuing conversation for quite a while now. But the conversation started to get more serious last year at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Had the situation arisen where an engine became available, Dale was going to field a car for me on bump day. And so, you know, at that point in time, the conversation started to get fairly serious. And when we missed that, we started talking about what other opportunities might be available. Now, obviously, Dale normally runs a two-car team. And last year and this year, I was not able to put together a big enough sponsorship package to be able to run with a team for, you know, more than a race or two races. However, once we started talking about the Indianapolis 500 again, Dale said to us, you know, I really would like to do this, but I'd really, really like it if you could put it together so we're not hanging around trying to do something on bump day, please. And, you know, given what happened last year, I am 100% in agreement with that analysis of the situation. And so we kept talking to Dale, and as things started to happen, we've been working on all sorts of various things behind the scenes and connecting businesses together in B2B type deals. And as one of those deals came to fruition, it was like, hey, Dale, do you still want to run a car? And so I'm going to be running with Dale this year at the Indianapolis 500, and I'm thrilled to be joining Justin and Anna.
Well, let's just get this out of the way, and we can just talk about it and get out of the way. As of yet, you have not announced a primary sponsor or associate sponsors, nor have you announced a number. I assume there's nothing more that you can tell us than today, correct?
If you want to,
if you want to use this opportunity to announce your number and your sponsors, you get an early plug in for them, by all means, please be our guest.
You know, ideally, we'd have loved to have put the information out there together. But when you have business-to-business deals and you're connecting companies together, sometimes the decision process on things takes a little bit longer. Obviously, opening weekend is next weekend. There have been a lot of rumors swirling around about me, about whether I was driving, about whether I wasn't driving. And not having an announcement out has made it very, very difficult to work with some of the associate sponsors that we were working with, because, you know, we tell them we have the deal done, but the announcement wasn't out there. Plus, there has been this huge interest that I've been sort of overwhelmed, amazed, and humbled by from the fan base as to whether I would be driving or not. And so this week, Dale and I spoke on the phone and via email, and the decision was made to put the announcement out there and just get out that, yes, I will be there. I am driving for Dale. Dale is fielding a car for me. And the rest of the details are coming, but we wanted you to know that. So we wanted you, everybody listening on this podcast, and all the fans to know that this is happening. And it got to the point where we both felt that was very important to do. Now, the good news is I can share that it looks like a decision, final decision has been made. And hopefully we will have the announcement about the title sponsor, and obviously the number as well, and the associate sponsors we've got on board before opening day. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
That's great. That's really good. And that's great to hear from Dale Coyne Racing as well, who, you know, I think he got ridiculed a lot for putting out a press release at St. Petersburg after the first practice that said, oh, by the way, Justin Wilson and Anna Beatrice are going to be driving for us.
Well, you know, this time it would have been my fault if it had happened that way around. And, you know, Dale was just as proactive as we were as wanting to get this out there. And had this been a very, very, very late announcement, that would have been my fault because, you know, we were considering trying to hang on to put the whole thing out at once rather than doing it in two parts.
Right. Well, of course, this is your first race in what, about 18 months since the Las Vegas race a couple years ago, and it's been a long road back for you. Talk a little bit, if you would, just about what you've been able to do to keep in the limelight and some of the fan response. You've had, as you mentioned, a huge groundswell of support from in the social media realms that you've kept in touch with. But just talk a little bit about what it's been like getting back into the game in your off time.
Well, firstly, it's not my first race. It might be my first IndyCar race back, but I actually raced in an open wheel series called AutoGP towards the end of last year. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, I did not get a lot of track time. It was 2 30-minute test sessions and go do two races, effectively. But it was a big, fast, powerful open wheel car. And I think getting back into that series and getting back into that car and just finding a way to get into something again really helped convince a lot of people that, you know, if we could put one of these deals together in time and I was coming back to Indy, that I was going to be ready for it. I never had a problem being convinced. I never thought there was anything wrong with my hand. I've never thought there was anything that I was going to suffer any mental issues. But outside people have needed some convincing. And I think that did a really, really, really great job of convincing some of those outside people. Having said that, obviously Dale wasn't one of them because he was prepared to put me in a car last year. So I think that was one of the reasons as well for going back to Dale, is when you know somebody's in your corner, you want to be in their corner too. Mm-hmm. In terms of some of the things I've been doing, you know, I might not have been driving, but I've actually been really busy. I've been working with Glasshammer Racing to help their female drivers, help try and promote them, help mentor them. I recently started work with Miles Ahead, which is a mini performance school. They're based out at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's the first racing school in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway history, and they now not only do teen driving schools and teen driving clinics around the country, we also have an adult performance driving school out at IMS. So that is a huge amount of fun. I've also been doing radio work. I've been working with the IMS Radio Network. They've been kind enough to have me on their broadcast. And this year, that actually effectively turned into a part-time job for me. And it's one of, you know, if I'm not in a race car, I think the radio booth is one of my favorite places to be at the racetrack, because it's so much fun getting to be in there and call the races and still be a part of the race weekend, because that's so important to me.
Being that you weren't in an Indy car in 2012, this is going to be your first experience in the new DW12. What are you looking forward to, or what are you apprehensive about jumping into a new car right away at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway?
I'm just really, really looking forward to the opportunity. I'm so grateful to be getting back into an Indy car. I can't tell you. There were times this year, and I might have stayed positive the entire time via social media and in public, but there were times where I really wondered whether it was going to be another year where I was left standing watching, and it enters into your mind, hey, if this happens 2 years in a row, I'm probably done. I'm probably not going to get another chance. And so that was playing in my mind. So I'm so thankful to be back and to have this opportunity to run with Dale. Am I apprehensive about anything? Right now, I don't think so. I just want to have the time to get in the car, to get comfortable, and to get up to speed. And the nice thing about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is even when it rains what feels like a lot, you still get more testing than you do before any other race weekend. And so that will give me that time to get up to speed. I think one of the most interesting things for me is I'm going to be going into this race class as a veteran. And I'm a veteran of all of, I think, three total IndyCar starts, one Indy 500 start, and zero starts in the DW12. And I'm not going to be classified a rookie. And I understand that, because I have done an Indianapolis 500 before, so for the 500 I wouldn't be a rookie again. But at the same time, when you consider that, that's kind of a little weird.
Now, in previous years, Indianapolis has allowed refresher courses for drivers who have not been in the car for quite some time. I can recall Davey Hamilton and Paul Tracy a couple of years ago when they only did Indianapolis. They were allowed to do those refresher courses. Do you know if that opportunity will be extended to you as well?
I don't know whether it will or not, but it was the thing last year that if you've missed even just the one previous year, you were required to do the refresher rather than having the opportunity extended to you. So that hasn't been communicated to me yet, but I'm sure the team is well aware of the situation, and I would be very surprised if we're not on track for the refresher.
Great. Now, talking about your team a little bit, you get the opportunity to be teamed with your countryman Justin Wilson and also Anna Beatrice. Have you had a chance to really catch up or talk with them at all, and what's your feeling going forward with them as teammates this year?
Well, I haven't really had the chance to speak to them since signing with Dale at all, but obviously, you know, Justin is such a well-respected driver. It's going to be really fantastic to have a teammate whom I can learn so much from, who's so well-respected. And in terms of Anna, I knew Anna in Indy Lights. We raced together in Indy Lights, and I'm friends with Anna. I like Anna. I think she's a great driver. And someone told me apparently it's the first time two female drivers have been teammates at the Indianapolis 500.
Correct.
It's kind of a small thing, but at the same time, it's kind of a cool thing.
Uh-huh.
And in my position where, you know, I do try to be an advocate for other female drivers and for females in motorsport in general, I kind of like it. It's kind of cool to be a part of that. Now, it wouldn't have changed my decision as to which team I went to, but, you know, that's a little tiny thing that I'll enjoy. So I'm really looking forward to working with both of them.
What would you say your goals are for the month of May? What will it take for you to say, you know, I had a really successful month of May this year?
The first thing to remember is that much like 2011, you know, we're not going to be rolling out with a full-time team. We're not rolling out with a full-time driver. And we're not rolling out with a big budget operation and a big crew behind us. We're going to do this. We're going to do this well with the people we've got. Dale is bringing in some great people to put on my car. And I think the big thing, first of all, is I want to spend a little bit of time just getting back up to speed. I want to work through whatever tests the team want me to do. I'd like to have a nice, smooth qualifying. If I could avoid some of the drama of 2011 that we had in qualifying then, that would be very, very nice. But, you know, a nice, smooth qualifying is on the would-like list. After that, I would really like a nice, smooth race. I kind of view this as a repeat of my rookie year. Because I have been out of an IndyCar for a while, because I haven't driven the DW12 before, that's how I'm approaching this. I'm approaching it as a repeat of my rookie year at IMS, and I'd like to come away with a nice, good, solid result. If I could come away with a top 15 or, you know, maybe even a top 10, I think a top 10 would almost be a win for us in that kind of circumstance, because whenever any rookie finishes in the top 10 at IMS, it's a really big deal. And while it may not say rookie next to my name on paper, that's how I view myself going into this race.
I know a lot of people will throw this out there. Make sure your water bottle is working for all 500 miles well.
Yeah, last time it worked for 0 miles, so 500 miles would be really, really great. I'm going to go for one of the old-fashioned ones, so you have to suck really, really hard to get any of the water to come through. None of this mechanical pump presser button rubbish for me, thank you.
If you go really old school, you're going to have the guy on the pit road with the stick hanging it out for you, you know, when you do your pit stops. That's really old school. Then you get to throw it back against the wall. There you go. Well, beyond Indianapolis, is there anything else that may be on your horizon for the rest of the year? Have you had an opportunity to discuss that with Dale or any other owners?
You know, right now, I'm just absolutely flat out getting sorted out for Indy this year. I'm absolutely flat out putting together some of these associate sponsorship deals that we're trying to get onto my driver's suit and onto the car, and I'm fully focused on the month of May. We'll talk about what happens after May, but May is all it's all about for me right now.
Great. Well, Pippa, I know you, as we talked about earlier, you've had a huge groundswell of support from folks on Facebook, on Twitter, on other forms of social media. I'm sure there's probably something you would probably want to say to all those people who've stuck by you and supported you through, you know, this last year, certainly since the last Indianapolis 500.
It's been amazing. Amazing is the only word for it. I actually got put in Twitter jail yesterday. I was trying to reply to everybody, and I got about 50 or so done, and then Twitter locked me in jail and wouldn't let me reply to anyone for about an hour. So I gave up on that, but, you know, thank you is just the one single big word that comes to mind. I can't tell everyone how much it means to me to see the amount of support that I had. And I actually use some analytics software for my Twitter account just to keep a track of, you know, what I'm doing and what people are responding to. And from my account, and so this doesn't count anything that other people tweeted or from my account, tweets from my account about my deal, they got around 250,000 impressions yesterday. Now, some of those will be repeat impressions, so sometimes it's somebody like yourself, for example. Maybe you're seeing the same thing a couple of times if somebody's retweeting it again, whom you follow, whom I follow, and it pops up again in your feed. But a lot of them are unique impressions. And so there's so many people who saw the story, who had it pass through their feed. I was trending in Indianapolis yesterday afternoon as a trending topic. That, to me, is just jaw-to-the-floor amazing. And when I'm going out and I'm approaching these local companies and trying to get them to come on board as associate sponsors, that's a really, really cool statistic to be able to use.
I would think that has to make an impression on those sponsors, no pun intended there, to really show, you know, not only are they investing in you as a racer, but as somebody who communicates so well with the fans that there are so many people that are pulling for you, that are following you, that you have made this connection with over the last couple of years. That has to be something that the sponsors look at and say, you know what, that's the type of person I want to get behind.
And you know, that's who I'm trying to be, and that's what I'm trying to do. It's And I'm completely honored and humbled that so many people do feel that connection to me, that people talk to me on Twitter, and that I have so many people following me. I mean, you know, 13,000 followers for a girl who last raced at the Indianapolis 500 2 years ago, it's pretty huge. So I'm just incredibly grateful to be in the position I'm in. And, you know, I can't tell you anything about the companies whom we're talking to right now, but there are some really cool local companies whom are considering getting involved. I would love to have them on board, so I really hope they do.
Well, Pippa, I know you've been very busy the last 24, 28 hours since this announcement came out. We certainly appreciate you taking some time. We cannot wait to see you back on track here in a couple, what is it, I guess about 10 days now?
About 10 days.
10 days. Cars will be back on track, and you will be one of them. Thank you so much again for joining us today. We really appreciate your time, and we look forward to following up with you later in the month and after the month to recap how you did.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much, Pippa.
And a pleasure, as always, to have Pippa on the More Front Wing podcast. She's been very, very good to us and kind with her time over the years, and we greatly appreciate it. She's always very interesting to speak with. So, Pippa, thank you very much for that. The next topic, I'm going to leave to you two guys to go back and forth on this, because I just don't play around with the whole IMS car count business. That's not my thing. I just kind of am happy to wait and see how it sorts itself out. It always seems to work itself out in the end, despite all of the gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands. But if you two would like to spend some time gnashing teeth and wringing hands, go to. Who wants to start?
Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I guess I'll start with the question, Paul. You know, we've certainly seen our share of panic over the last 2 weeks or so with the almost like clockwork articles coming out about how we're not going to have 33 at Indy. At this point, would you say you're probably just about 100% sure we're going to have at least 33 at Indy? I mean, can we just assume, can we get that assumption out there?
There will be 33 at Indy. I have absolutely no doubt that there'll be 33 cars ready to go race morning. I'd be surprised if there aren't 33 drivers assigned to cars by the time we get going. In what, about 10 days now, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hear it every year. Every year it comes to fruition. This year it's going to be just the same. I have no doubts. I think we're at 31 cars now. I think there are plenty of options. I think you're looking at Townsend Bell probably in at Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Schmidt, whether or not a third ride materializes there, I don't know. I think if you see a Buddy Lazier car, you're going to see that with the Chevrolet engine, obviously. That would probably point to him probably at Dragon Racing, I would guess, is probably where that third car would go. There's 33 right there. So then if something happens for Jacques Lazier, if something happens for Jay Howard, you got to assume Jay Howard would probably be in a Honda. Maybe you look at Sarah Fisher for that one. I don't know what other Honda teams have availability, but I think we'll have 33. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if we see 34 or 35, but I don't think that's likely. I think given the circumstance of how difficult it is for these teams to bring up sponsorship right now, I don't think you're going to see 34 or 35 unless both of those extra entries have good, solid sponsorship. I don't think you're going to see somebody, a Sam Schmidt, roll out a third unfunded car just to get us to 34 or 35. So I think I have no doubt we'll get to 33. I think 34 or 35 is likely or is possible, a good possibility, if they're funded rides. Like I said, I don't think you'll see an unfunded 34th or 35th.
Any credence to this Brian Clausen with KV rumor that's going around, guys?
Well, I'm not sure if it's specifically KV. That's, I believe, what Kurt Cavins mentioned. A couple weeks ago, Brian Clausen, it's my understanding, was previously had not been offered his Monster Road to Indy USAC money, which has been remarkably quiet, by the way, if you've noticed this year. There's been no mention of that at all. Apparently, the program is still in place, but the option to use it for the 500 was not offered until a few weeks ago. Now, some people will point to that and say, well, that's, you know, that's the powers that be trying to make sure that they've got enough entries, or it could have just been a late decision. But Claussen is, he seems, at least a couple days ago, seemed fairly confident that he's scrapping and putting something together. Now, is it KV? I don't know. They were pretty adamant up until, well, I mean, they've been adamant all along that they were really stuck with two cars. So, or not stuck at two cars, but running two cars. So does Claussen have something? It sounds like he does. Is it with KV? On that, I can't mention. I don't know if Paul's heard anything different or not.
No, I haven't heard anything, you know, more definitive other than, you know, it seems like KV is the most likely. Now, they've run three cars recently, so I think they have the ability to do so. Whether they have the resources, the personnel resources right now to do it, I don't know. But they certainly have experience in running those three cars.
Right. And I think that's one of the ways I'm thinking we'll have 34. I mean, Paul, I wouldn't be stunned if it's 33, but I'm feeling fairly good about 34 between Townsend Bell and what we know about Brian Claussen, you know, and just some of that. There are a number of possibilities, and really, if Claussen and Townsend Bell are in place, then you just need one more. And it does sound like the Buddy Lazier thing has some credence. I mean, I give none at all. I think, you know, every year we talk about Buddy Rice, you know, that's an annual tradition. I think that kicks off the month of April, doesn't it? You're talking about Buddy Rice getting a ride at this point. That's not going to happen, and I'm extremely skeptical on the Jacques Lazier news as well. I don't think that's going to be a go for him. So, you know, 33, 34, I think we will have one car for bumping maybe. If we get 35, I won't faint, but it seems a little bit of a push, especially if Buddy Lazier's program doesn't come through or something. But, again, you never know. There's always some strangeness, and Jay Howard's been strangely quiet, if you've noticed. You know, he's just said he's working on it. He was much more vocal last year, and you can chalk that up to bluster or whatever with the Michael Shank Racing and the terrible situation that was. So
definitely some interesting stuff going on leading into the month of May. Do we dare talk about what's going on after the month of May? Of course, we got the official statement today from Dry and Reinbold Racing about their intentions to severely cut back their operations and not enter cars in any races following the Indianapolis 500. And then there was Jenna Fryer's tweet today indicating that, Zach, you had the exact wording. Do you want to let us know what that was?
Yes. Jenna today mentioned that after the 500, apparently, there is another team not threatening, not guaranteeing, but grumbling about cutting back. So you can certainly take that as you will. That could be anything from a driver just or an owner just complaining about costs to something more substantial than that. And certainly with Dreyer and Reinbold being yanked, you know, that's a little bit worrisome, of course. But you know, as she says, you know, I know of at least one other IndyCar owner grumbling of scaling back after Indy 500 because of sponsorship. This is a problem. And then she referenced Mark D. Miles, 53, and his locked account with four Twitter followers on Twitter. So
right.
Not sure if that's going to hit home or not, but there it is. So,
well, I guess from the one hand, you know, it's there are the two different approaches you can look at, right? I strongly prefer the one where DRR takes the high road and doesn't complain to journalists. They actually come out and say, yes, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they be upfront about it, and they don't complain about their situation. They just say, this is what it is, and, you know, we're working on it. There are some owners who prefer a different tack, and that is their style, and we all know who they are, and, you know, such is the way that things go. The other way to look at it, though, is that it's not really a secret that these days a lot more people are deciding to go into other forms of racing, particularly sports car racing, because your money goes a little bit further there. You know, it's been said several times this year, you look at guys like Ryan Briscoe and Gustavo Yakimin, who both went to IndyCar teams and said, well, look, I've got about $1 million. What can you do? And they say, great, that's 20%. Go get the rest. Whereas you go to a sports car team with $1 million and they say, okay, let's go racing, right?
Right.
And it's starting to – I mean, if that's what the genesis of this is, then it's not completely unreasonable to say, yes, this is a problem, because IndyCar's entire purpose in the DW12 was meant to be bringing down their costs, and it simply hasn't worked. And, you know, is this rumor mongering, or is this the result of that, the failure of that project to cut the costs that it was meant to?
Makes you hope that when they go through this whole process again, whether it's in 14, 15, 16, whenever that next cycle is, that they really take a better look at what happened, what failed with this cycle, with the DW12, and really get a good understanding and bring more people on board from the beginning, including all those team owners and manufacturer representatives, not just one person to represent the entire group, but really bring them all on board and figure out, A, why this whole system failed. Why did they fail to reduce cost? Why were they – not only have they not reduced cost, but they haven't hit the goal of diversifying the cars as they had hoped to. They got the engine manufacturer a little bit diverse, but they didn't diversify the chassis or the look. Nor did they bring in any of the external partners that they had hoped for. And when they had talked about bringing in a Boeing or Lockheed Martin or these independent, like Orica was another one that they had talked about may come on board. You know, since they've gotten rid of the body kits for now, they haven't been able to bring on any of these external entities to bring more support to the series. Why has that failed? And hopefully they have a good understanding of why all of that failed before they make a decision on what the next generation of IndyCar will be after this. And I think that'll be critical toward making the next cycle successful, if they get to a next cycle.
Oh, I didn't want to be the Debbie Downer on that one, but now you've gone and done it for me, so thank you. But what's crazy is talking about this car as being a failure. It's such a shame that this aspect of it wasn't able to fly, because it's done such wonders for the on-track product. It's just a lot of fun to watch, to the point where people are saying, hey, some people are saying, don't bother with the aero kits, because this is great. We don't want to mess it up. So it's just somewhere along the way that one critical factor of making IndyCar racing more affordable was the thing that didn't make it into the equation. And does that stem maybe from that sole supplier relationship? And was that always going to be the case with having Dallara produce the tubs? Because, you know, that's the exact problem that everybody complained about with the last one, was there's no competition in pricing, and there's no one else to go to. In fact, it's mandated in the rule book that you can't go anywhere else to get your replacement parts, and so there is no way to bring the cost down.
Right. Well, you know, I think it's important to remember that while that's all valid, and, you know, definitely we've heard enough, and clearly, you know, next time on the next go-around, these are considerations that need to be fleshed out better, and there needs to be more pulling in one direction. But for teams like Dreyer and Reinbold and whatnot, and even let's talk about HVM last year, it's not as if it was just the new DW12 that contributed to their insolvency, or, you know, them needing to take a step back or refocus. There's also the issue of the Lotus engine and some of the uncertainty with that. And, you know, imagine going to your sponsor how long before the season starts and being like, well, you know, we don't know what we're going to have.
Mm.
And then explaining to your sponsor week after week that, okay, well, we're with this. Okay, well, we, you know, hey, we're going to finish 26 this week again. But by golly, we'll be out there. You know, teams that rely on a patchwork of sponsorship or a very thin veneer of just having enough to do that aren't going to be able to weather the storm as well as some larger entities that kind of have more secure footing. And I think to a point, you know, I don't want to call this a natural evolution, you know, or a life cycle or anything in IndyCar, because, you know, I think what happened to Dreyer and Reinbold could have been prevented if they started last year maybe with a Chevy or something. I don't want to say that for sure, but I think we have to throw it out there. But, you know, teams come and go to a point, and I think part of the differentiation and part of the very difficult task that I'm glad I don't have to do is discerning between owners just crying because that's what owners do, or owners who are seriously in the red because of decisions made. I mean, you know, for every PDM racing that goes away and goes through its life cycle, there's a good team we lose, whether it's Newman Haas or you know, a team that needs to refocus like Dreyer and Reinbold.
But at the same time, Zach, how many teams are there that aren't operating in the red? Even Roger Penske has been funding his third car out of his pocket.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, that's why I say, you know, I think you really do. And, you know, again, I'm glad I'm not the finance guy for this stuff in the number crunchers. I can't imagine anything less pleasurable than being in a room with Roger Penske and Chip Ganassi and all these other guys arguing about chassis price or something. I mean, that sounds like a certain circle of hell. I'm not sure which one, but it's down there. And, you know, this stuff's going to have to be addressed, certainly.
But, you know, it's really interesting, though, Zach. You mentioned like the teams like Penske and Ganassi who, yeah, they're already probably spending a lot more money than everyone, but they're also the ones that are pushing to have more diversity in the IndyCar series. You know, you listen to the Tim Cindrics or you listen to the Mike Hulls, who really represent very much what those organizations are, stand for, and what they do. Those are the guys that are saying, hey, you know what? We need to bring more innovation back in this. You know,
yes.
They're only teams that are in a position financially that they can support that. The other teams don't, they don't even, they're lucky to pay their bills every month. They can't afford to be shopping around for which aero kit they want to select from the myriad options available. They're going to go for the lowest common denominator because they're scraping by.
But there's the question, can they not afford to, or can they not afford not to do it?
Right, but you try telling that to a team owner who's got his salaries to pay.
Well, we've already seen in this era of you know, recipe and cookbook type technology that this isn't working either.
I don't disagree with you. I think that what fans seem to cry for above and beyond anything else is we want the cars to you know, open the book, basically. We want to see that innovation. We want to see these people who are good, the best in their fields at their jobs, have the ability to use that and you know, blow away the rest of the field with their own hands and their tools, right? But I think there comes a point where we have to accept that those days have been gone since what was the year that the engine debacle with the Alfa Romeos happened, Paul? Was that 94?
No, 1990.
Right.
89, 90, yeah.
And ever since the engine technology became intellectual property, I think that spelled the end of it. And that goes far beyond opening the rule book. That goes into what the engine manufacturers are willing to disclose and open up to the teams. And it's far more messy than a lot of fans realize. And I just, you know, that might be one of those areas where we have to accept that it's never going to open up the way that people want it to. And so we got to find another solution because that one's not coming.
Well, and I think, you know, another thing fans need to consider is it's a double-edged sword. I've seen fans on Twitter with one tweet talk about, you know, praise how close the racing is and how you can throw a blanket over the field and how, you know, the little guys are taking it to the big guys every week. And then in the other one, they want unlimited innovation and unlimited spec. And it's like, well, do you think you're not going to have 30 seconds between cars?
Exactly. Racing fan these days has the attention span to deal with a race where one driver is out?
They don't. I mean, you know, to a point, it's one of the reasons that baseball is in a little bit of trouble. You know, I'm a baseball fan. Well, technically, I'm a baseball fan. I'm a Royals fan, which is close. But it's but a lot of people, you know, that's something that the baseball pundits talk about, is how people don't have patience for a, you know, the pitcher looks, winds up, throws, foul tip, repeat 79 times, you know. So I think you have to balance the shorter attention spans and micro cycles, and, you know, some people still want that nuance of watching it play out, and it's okay if, you know, this guy's 45 seconds ahead of the field because you're there for the technology and whatnot. Other people, when that happens, they're going to find out that, you know, a certain level of innovation and a certain level of openness is not what they wanted. And I don't know, if I had answers, I probably wouldn't just be a mid-major blogger. So that's, you know, that's for someone else to talk about further, I guess.
It really sickens me to think that we've modified the sport for sort of what society demands of it, as opposed to keeping it in its purest form. And, you know, I guess we can all take the pitchforks and torches to NASCAR on that one, with, you know, all the rules that they've created that we all complain about on this side. But it sickens me more to think about having to dilute what this great sport once was to come down to the level of the people who don't have the attention span to deal with watching someone who's truly good at what they do run away. But that's just a fact of life these days. And, you know, the sport needs to find ways to stay alive. It's not like IndyCar is the only section of the sport that's going through it. Look at the Pirelli situation in Formula One right now. It's the exact same thing. So everybody's fighting this, and everybody's trying to find the solution, and nobody's found the perfect storm yet. So
no, whether it's IndyCar, I mean, we tease NASCAR a lot for its, you know, bread and circuses and, you know, all that, but they, you know, what do? They give the highlights, and they try to give it this snippet, you know, short form bursts of action, you know, and they're playing to what works right now.
Yeah.
So
don't get me started about NASCAR.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of complaining I could do about them lately too.
It's May. We'll leave it at
exactly. And on that note, let's bring the conversation back around to Indianapolis Motor Speedway, because I was fortunate to earlier today, but by the time that anybody listens to this, that will mean yesterday, speak with young Zach Veach of Andretti Autosport driving in Firestone Indy Lights. The Firestone Indy Lights cars are headed to IMS today, as of when you hear this, for their first test of the month of May. And Zach Veach had a lot of interesting things to say about how his season has gone thus far, what it's been like being with one team through all of the rungs of the Road to Indy ladder, and being with the only team that has made the investment in doing that, as well as, you know, the elephant in the room of the car counts and what that means for the future of Firestone Indy Lights and what can be done about that, and some of the things that he's been up to, because he's just a darn interesting kid. He was one of CNN's intriguing people a few years ago. He wrote a book before he was 16. He was a semi-finalist for Sports Illustrated Sports Kid of the Year Award a couple years ago, and he's about to be interviewed by Larry King, so he's got a whole lot going on. And so perhaps you'd like to hear about it. Let's let you listen to that interview right now. Steph Walcraft of MoreFrontWing.com here speaking with Andretti Autosport driver in the Firestone Indy Lights series, Zach Veach, who is a driver for most of our listener base, probably doesn't really need much introduction. Zach is very well known among fans, not only for his on-track performance and his lightning-quick ascent through the Road to Indy, but also for the many ways that he's making headlines off the track as well. So for those who may not recognize the name Zach Veach, let's give you a quick little introduction. He's 18 years old from Stockdale, Ohio, and as we mentioned, is a rookie currently with Andretti Autosport and Firestone Indy Lights. And so, Zach, maybe that is a good place to start, because your 4 years, I think it is, that you've been in the Road to Indy, you have spent all of those years with Andretti Autosport, and they have supported you through your entire very quick rise through the system. So could you just talk a little bit about the experience of coming through that ladder with one team behind you and sort of finding that home that's able to support you enough to make the moves as quickly as you have?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've been very fortunate to be with a team as great as Andretti, especially throughout my whole career. It's, you know, really at the end of the day, it's just there's so much knowledge there from all the series kind of combined into one place. So, you know, in 2010, as a 15-year-old coming into my first season of USF 2000, I was going to the Indy Lights guys at the time with a lot of questions and even the IndyCar guys. And, you know, they helped me kind of prepare a little quicker than I thought was going to happen. So then having the great advice from Michael on top of that, it just really gives me a great learning kind of tools to use as I progress the series. And it's really become a family for me. You know, the mechanics I have on my car now, I remember meeting them 3 years ago, and, you know, they've got to the point where, you know, they can look at my face and tell if the change was good or not. So it's a very good team to be a part of, and I'd like to be here my whole career if I can.
That's great. One thing that people refer to a lot is the fact that Andretti is the only team that has actually set up support at all four rungs of the ladder. And you started to talk about what a benefit that is in that you sort of know everyone. But can you talk, sort of get into more detail about exactly how that benefits you? How much time do you get to spend with the drivers at the higher levels? And how much information, technical, whatever, is transferred, can be transferred between the cars and at the different levels, that sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first off, it's just, I think a big thanks goes to Michael Andretti for kind of seeing the value in the Mazda Road Indy. IndyCar racing is always a sport that he's loved, but not only as a driver, he cares about the future. And being able to have a program like the Mazda Road Indy series and putting all four series in his shop, it shows that, you know, he really cares about what the future of the series is like, and we're going to definitely keep working harder to make that even better. But, you know, there's a lot of learning as you jump up through the steps of the Mazda Road Indy, but it's much like anything else. This is like going to school to be a professional race car driver. If you want to be a doctor, you have to go through the steps of med school. If you want to be an IndyCar driver, you have to go through the steps of the Mazda Road Indy series. So there's a little bit of similarity, but as you were saying, there is a lot of things that you have to kind of advance through technologically and from just the way the cars are as well. So USF 2000, it's about 140 mile an hour top speed. It's a tube frame chassis, and you really got to drive around like a go-kart. Then you get into the Star Mazda car, a little faster, about 160, full carbon fiber car. So you're starting to really kind of feel where you're going to end up going one day. But it just, instead of driving it like a go-kart, you got to start driving it smoother and smoother, and then you jump into the lights car. We'll be doing 193 at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway tomorrow, so that's a pretty big jump, the biggest one I've felt so far. But, you know, just like you had to do in the Mazda, in the lights car, you have to be even smoother and then just learn so much more about the car when it comes to adjusting it. So each step gets a little harder, but, you know, as you mature, it becomes a little easier, too, so it's kind of a trade-off.
Right. And I do want to talk to you, of course, about the fact that you're about to make your first trip to the month of May. But before we get to that, maybe I can get you to recap for those who may not have been able to pay attention your season thus far, which, you know, sadly is probably
right.
Not what you were hoping for coming into the early season. But I'll let you recap that in your own words.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of places I could start on this season, but, you know, it's been a learning year for sure. We had a lot of time off-season testing, and I feel like, you know, we learned a lot and we were prepared going into the season. But, you know, right now we're just looking for some luck, and that's the biggest thing. So if any of you guys know where I can buy some, I'd really appreciate it. Because, you know, we finished fifth at St. Pete, so that wasn't too bad. It wasn't what we were wanting, but, you know, we'll definitely always take a top five. Then at Barber, we had a right rear go flat due to a puncture midway through the race, and you know, we rebounded at Long Beach, was able to qualify P3, and then we were only under green for about 5 seconds, and we were taken out on the start. So I'm really hoping that Indy does a little better for us, especially when we get back to the oval.
Right, of course. So, as you mentioned, there's a test which is tomorrow, which is actually today by the time that people will hear this. And
okay.
So two questions about that. First of all, let's look in the short term. What are you and the team hoping to accomplish tomorrow?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it was, even with Carlos, we're going to be learning a lot from Carlos. But for me, it's just coming to the point of learning the track. You know, Indy is not like any other place on the planet, so it's going to take a lot getting used to, but then once we get comfortable and we get the car set right, my teammate Carlos Munoz and I will go out and then just start working on traffic. You know, when it comes down to the end of May, it's really important of how good of a race car you have. So, you know, we're already starting kind of our plan of running together and seeing the things that we can improve on once we get there.
Right. And in the longer term, of course, you don't know how the month is going to go, but you do know where your head is at coming into a place that is just so huge, not only physically, but in legend as well. So this will be your first experience running any sort of race at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Where's your head at? What are you thinking? How are you preparing yourself?
You know, like when you're like a little kid and it was Christmas and the night before, like you wanted to think what Santa was going to bring, but you couldn't figure it out. And then walking down the stairs or, you know, walking to the tree the next day, you found out and you're so excited. That's kind of how I feel right now. You know, Indianapolis has always been kind of the dream growing up. You know, the 500's been the dream, but getting to run there in a Firestone Indy Lights car, I'll gladly take as well. So, of course, it's going to be a lot of learning to it, but, you know, we're thinking long-term for that. So we're going to learn as much as we can in preparation for the Freedom 100. But, you know, even with some of the bad luck we've had at the beginning of the season, we've been able to, you know, be P1 in a couple sessions or P1 for a while in some of those. So, you know, I definitely think the speed is getting there. We're getting more comfortable in the car, and you know, we're definitely hungry for our first Firestone Indy Lights win, and we'd love to get it here at Indy.
Well, who wouldn't? Absolutely. while we're talking about Firestone Indy Lights, it's impossible these days, I'm sure, for you to do any interviews without the subject of the low car count coming up.
Right.
So presumably you've had a lot of time to talk about it, and you've got a good answer for me as to what might be some things that they can do that can be done by the series, by the teams, by the drivers to address that and try to strengthen the series and bolster it for the future.
Yeah, well, one of the things, I think it comes down to the driver responsibility. We got to stop taking each other out so much.
That would be a good plan, especially right off.
Yeah, you know, yeah. At least let us get through turn one. But anyway, I think that's a little fill on it from Long Beach anyway. But, you know, I think just a lot of people, they were wondering with the new car coming out or the plans of the new car coming out. It was a little hesitation if they wanted to, you know, start a team this year and then have to buy new stuff again all next year. So, you know, with that being postponed, I think that's going to help a lot of people. And another thing is, you know, you really can't cut budget in very many places, but I think if we got that a little lower, that would help out as well. Because, you know, it's definitely taken a lot of the drivers to make the jump from Mazda to Indy Lights, because it's quite harder than USF 2000, which is now Pro Mazda.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just all a lot more difficult, but I think we're going to see some cars start coming back. It's just, even though we only have 9 cars in this series, I think it's a very competitive 9 group. Because I think here in Indianapolis, they're expecting to have around 14 cars, which that would be great for the race. But it seems like any one of those guys can win, and it's very tough. So it's always going to be a great show. It's just the numbers aren't exactly where we want them right now.
Right. And you'd like to have more guys to beat, I presume, of course.
Well, I mean, you know, when you win at a field of 30 compared to a field of 9, it sounds a little better. But, you know, I think winning, if you'd win an Indy Lights race with the 9 guys that are in it now, I'd feel like a win in a group of 30. It's just, it's so tough and competitive. I mean, I've been racing with these guys, or most of these guys, my whole life through karting, USF 2000, Pro Mazda, and now here, so it's you really kind of start figuring each other out and you build a history with everyone.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point and well said. Speaking of you being well spoken, let's talk about some of the awards and accolades that you've received. And we're going to use this conversation to lead into your most recent exciting news. But 18 years old, you have been the spokesperson for Focus Driven, which is an organization that means to combat distracted driving, and you led that campaign, I believe, to petition, asked to get IndyCar drivers to sign a petition against texting and driving. That was a couple of years ago, right? In 2010, you were one of CNN's Intriguing People. You wrote a book before you were 16 called 99 Things Teens Wish They Knew Before Turning 16. And you were also a semifinalist for Sports Illustrated's annual Sports Kid of the Year Award. And as if that weren't enough, what's this about you being interviewed by Larry King?
Let's just say we've been very busy outside the car. I think sometimes it's like I'm going 200 miles per hour when I'm at home. And, you know, on top of everything else, I'm still finishing up senior year with K-12. So with them being an online school, it made it very easy for me to kind of keep my schedule in line. But, you know, one of my heroes has always been Ayrton Senna, and definitely for everyone loves what he did on track. But, you know, he was one of the first drivers that actually kind of reached out and tried to help his community and, you know, his country. So I've always wanted to kind of do the same and use racing as a way to get in front of a stage and in front of an audience and try to build a following behind me. So, you know, we've done a lot of great things. And like you said, we just found out today that we are one of the two winners of the Larry King contest. So that is going to allow us to be interviewed by Larry King, and very excited for that, especially because I think Danica Patrick, she said that was her by far the favorite interview she ever did. So I'm very excited to get to talk to him. And, you know, of course, he probably has a lot of experience in anything he does because he was kind of around before, you know, race cars were even invented. So I'm very excited to get to talk to him and, you know, kind of spread our message even further.
Very cool. Let's sort of take that a step further and talk about how it was that you became aware of the importance in a race car driver's career of the ability to promote yourself and make yourself a commodity worth seeking out. Of course, we all know at this stage that James Hinchcliffe is the master at that, and you seem to be following so directly in his footsteps. In fact, that you're co-introducing a 500 festival concert this Saturday, I think.
Yeah, Hinch is a really good friend of mine, and yeah, of course, we've always really gotten together on the media side of things, so I think one day it'd be awesome to be able to call him, you know, an actual teammate to meet, like when we're running in the IZOD IndyCar Series together one day. But, you know, Hinch really understands what the modern-day race car driver is like, and, you know, I was very lucky that even when I was growing up, I didn't realize it at the time, but, you know, I had a lot of help from my dad just kind of teaching me that, you know, kind of the business side of racing, because it's very different than modern sport, stick and ball sports that you have today. Because, you know, with those, you can get to the top on just talent alone. And, you know, to be a professional race car driver, of course, you have to be very talented to drive and compete, but you also have to be able to, you know, kind of represent yourself and find sponsorship. So, you know, really it's like being an athlete on the track, but a very good businessman on the, outside the car. So it's been very tough, but I've had a lot of fun with it too. You know, I'd like to have kind of that IndyCar driver celebrity status one day and kind of be a hero to, you know, kids growing up like Michael Andretti and all the others were heroes to me growing up.
Very cool. This is by far one of the most cliche questions that you get, I'm sure, and I'm sure you've asked it 1,000 times, but I feel obligated to ask it because I haven't had the chance to do it myself. Do you feel like you've missed out on the teenage experience of being just a normal kid, and does that bother you, or do you just think that you're so lucky to do what you do that it doesn't even cross your mind?
No, not at all. I mean, if anything I've missed out on the teenage years would be getting in trouble. you know, racing's kept me on the kind of a straight and narrow growing up, so it's been very good for me. And, you know, it's allowed me to kind of get a jump start on kind of the adult world as well, because in 2010, really, we were the first kids getting involved in auto sports. And, you know, it's a very adult, mature area, and that's what kind of made me have to grow up so fast, because, you know, when we're talking about going 220 miles per hour, they're really serious still. So, you know, I've been very lucky to grow up, but, you know, a lot of people ask me the same thing when it comes to taking my education online with K-12, but, you know, I don't think I missed out on anything a normal teenage high school student would. I still have friends that go online. I've got to travel, you know, everywhere with racing and still get a great education on top of that. So it's been a very lucky teenage years for me. And I wouldn't, if I could go back, I would do it exactly the same. I wouldn't want to trade it for anything.
Awesome. So in the broader view, I presume that IndyCar is your goal at this stage.
Yes.
Yes. So with that in mind, where do you go from here? We presume that, you know, if you don't win the title this year, another year in Firestone Indy Lights is in the cards for you, that I assume, in order to get a little more experience to lead you into perhaps the title and a little bit of extra boost from the championship award that financially that has pushed so many of the graduates into IndyCar. So let's say just hypothetically then that you do have an amazing resurgence and come back from the start of this year and you do win the title. Do you at that stage feel ready to move up to IndyCar? Do you think you've got enough experience, or would you feel better holding yourself back a year?
Yeah, these are some really good questions. I always love interviews like this, but it's really just kind of seeing where we are at the end of the year. Being with Michael Andretti, he never wants to move his drivers up too quickly. I've already learned so much in the first three Indy Lights races. We started off, just trying to learn as much as we can, and we've improved and found ourselves running towards the front of the grid. So I hope that really continues throughout the year. And, we just got a couple more spots to move up in qualifying and in the race to get our first win. So we're definitely still improving a lot this year, but if that would happen, we just kind of have to evaluate it from there. Probably an IndyCar test would be in the cards to see if, we are, but it's all about taking one step at a time. And, when I make my IndyCar debut, or hopefully when I make my IndyCar debut one day, I want to make sure that we're ready for that and we're prepared. I don't want it to, be anything but that.
Okay. Well, it sounds like your head is definitely in the right place, and I had a feeling we're going to see you there someday, Zach. So.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to me, for sure.
Well, thank you so much for your time with speaking to not only me, but letting our listeners at home listen in. And best of luck at IMS and for the rest of the Firestone Indy Lights season, and we'll see you in Winter Circle.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to that.
Fantastic to hear from Zach Veach. What a kid. Gosh, I think I'm busy sometimes, but he's got it going on, and I think he's destined for big things, so great to talk to him. But, we've been getting ahead of ourselves a lot today and talking about the month of May and Indianapolis Motor Speedway because it's just so darned easy to do, but we have got this other race that we got to get through before we can really get started with that. There's this whole thing where the teams kind of packed up everything they own and headed down to, the other side of the planet, Brazil. Yeah. So, Sao Paulo.
Is there a more overlooked event in all of racing?
Seriously. I sure hope the people down in Brazil are making a bigger deal of it than we are here. Because, gosh, man, people just let this one slide. One quick, before we offer our predictions for what we expect to see this weekend, one quick thing that's worth mentioning is that Tony Kottmann and his NZR Consulting, which is the company that's responsible for the track build in Brazil, has made a few changes to the opening chicane, the turn one and turn two, that has been the fate of many a driver over the past 3 years. He's widened the barriers through turn one and turn two. I think he said in turn two, he's added about 10 feet further room for the drivers to get through, which should assist a great deal on the double file restarts, which I'm sure is music to a lot of ears. Maybe not Delaro's, but everyone else's. And there's not much to say about that other than hooray, should improve the product. Nobody likes to see, there are a few people who like to see a whole lot of driver on the racetrack, but no one in this conversation here would count themselves among that group. Let's go hard and see some good racing. Paul, who's going to win?
Willpower shakes the monkey this week.
Really?
Yep.
Ah, bold prediction. What makes you say that? Because he's going to be in his game. I know, it's crazy to think that we'd be calling Willpower bold prediction, right? But it's been a year. What's changed? What's different now from every other weekend so far this year?
I don't know. I just think that, maybe getting away from the mainland, getting away from the U.S. media, just letting them focus really on the racing. It's obviously a track he's had great success at over the last several years. He likes the track. It's kind of right in his wheelhouse where it's very technical in a lot of the portions of it. I just think that Will's going to shake the monkey this weekend.
Zach?
I have to go with Will as well. I don't know if it's just me conditioned to see him win at Sao Paulo since it
No one else has.
Yeah, we don't know that it's physically possible for willpower not to win here. I mean, we don't know. We've never seen it. So I guess this week will be an experiment. I'd really like to pick Sato because that was a long time coming last week, and he's been excellent down at Brazil. But we're going to have something pretty shocking, it sounds like, for Sao Paulo, and that's about a 0% chance of precipitation last time I checked.
Believe that when I see it.
That
hasn't happened? Yeah, no. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, it might change to 100% by the time this airs, but that was supposed to be a dry race. So I guess give me Will with a few reservations. If Sato goes two in a row, I'm going to try and do a backflip, and I'll watch the 500 from my hospital bed. But I'm going to give it a shot if it happens. So.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should say that because I cannot get Takuma Sato's run at Long Beach out of my head, and I don't know. I got a feeling I'm gonna go out way out on that limb and pick him because not only has he, other than as Paul liked to remind me last week, his immense brain fart on his very first outing at this track where he forgot how IndyCar brakes work. He has been pretty strong at Brazil, and not only that, but I seem to recall that at the first race in Brazil, Vitor Mira with AJ Foyt Racing had a podium. And that was his first race back from his back injury, or was it? I feel like it. No, that was Will's first race back from his back injury. But anyway, apropos to nothing, I still think that combination might surprise a lot of people, and maybe this could be the year that somebody else wins in Brazil. Probably not a Brazilian, sadly, but you never know. It could be Elio. Could be TK. KV's been strong enough. Who knows? IndyCar is full of surprises. Just a couple of quick notes before we sign off. Do remember when you're planning your weekend that this is a two-day event this weekend. There's nothing on Friday as usual in Brazil. If you need to know the times of anything this weekend, you can find them all at our event summary, which is now available not only off our front page, but at morefrontwing.com/eventsummary, making it a little bit easier to find. I've sure been using that feature. I found it pretty handy, which is maybe perhaps why I thought that I wanted to do it. But I think other people will find it handy as well. And so everything you could possibly need to know about the weekend, you will find there as things unfold. And with that, I think we'll call it a day, guys. Zach, thanks so much for sitting in. It's always a pleasure to have you. I'm sure we'll have you back again in the very near future.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me again, guys.
Thank you. And Paul, no thanks to you.
Yeah.
I don't have to thank you. You're here every week.
Yes. I'm saddled with the responsibility of putting up with you every week.
Well, you and I could together thank everyone at home for listening, because they somehow put up with us every week too, for some reason. And looking forward to Brazil. And next week, we can put Brazil behind us, as everybody's in such a hurry to do, and look forward to the month of May. But in the meantime, if you need IndyCar news and views, get a grip with More Front Wing.